I'm moving in a little bit different direction from most people who are writing codes for evolving waterways, because a typical code for waterways or for any other moving interface problem, which is the sort of thing I do, a typical code is a thing of beauty, which has been slaved over by generations of graduate students and sometimes even faculty, and when graduate students aren't available. And I'm working on solving moving interface problems in a little more generality, in the sense that I'd like to have a code which will solve a wide variety of moving interface problems without knowing, without knowing anything at all about the actual problem I'm solving would be ideal. But the closest approach to that ideal is to know very little about the problem you're solving. And the reason for doing this is not so strong in fields like waterways, where people more or less know how to do the modeling, well, except for after what happens after breaking and things like that. I'm coming from fields like material science, where most of the arguments are about how do you model anything. And when you're modeling, what you do is you make up models, and you see what they say. And seeing what they say means solving the problem numerically, because you rarely can do anything analytically. So you want to be able to change your model in a very free way without being restricted by the fact that your current spectral code requires the interface to be three halves of a differentiable or whatever. So you want to, so I want to build a code that will solve a wide variety of problems without knowing too much details. I have a few problems in the back of my head when I'm thinking about such things. Fluid interfaces like Kelvin-Helmholtz instability, where you have initially a small perturbation, eventually roll up, separate, you know, detachment, separation, bad stuff happening, which will require you to have a fairly general representation of the interface. You cannot assume that it's always going to be a function, or situations in which you have singularities in the interface, meaning that you can't assume your solution is smooth all the time. And a lot of course, you can tell a lot about these problems by asymptotics, analysis, things like that, if you're really smart, and if the problem remains fairly simple. But eventually, you are going to want to do some numerical calculations, and then it's good if you don't have to build your entire code from scratch for every new problem. Question?
To allow us to do a contingent policy,
so a drop. Yes. Yes, I'm absolutely. One of the basic requirements for what I'm doing is that I absolutely want to be able to handle situations in which the interface changes topology, a drop separates, or pieces merge together. Because, as I say, I'm coming from a materials background where you're doing things like grain growth, crystals, melting, solidification, and so forth, though I have done some stuff with fluids. But things break off all the time. You don't want to be restricted in your approach. So the goal is to handle is to have a user-friendly code, first of all. And that means that you've got to have a package that people can use as opposed to a code that only you yourself can use. I want to be able to handle complex topologies. So possibly, ideally, you'd like to be able to handle thousands of pieces of interfaces. Of course, numerical examples always have 10 or 20 at the most. It's like the molecular dynamics talks you hear where they talk about the DNA or something like that, and the numerical examples are all water molecules. Right, so that's where we are anyway. So I'm interested in having absolutely arbitrary interfacial geometry and topology changing with time, and I want to be able to have to handle arbitrary physical phenomena in the bulk phases on each side of the interface. So you could have fluids, gases, solids. If you insist, you can have elasticity in the solids and so forth. And the interface is going to see some velocity as a result of all of this. So the question is, how do you move the interface with this velocity and without knowing where that velocity comes from? So don't build the velocity details into your numerical method for moving interfaces. And now, there's a political motivation for all this, which is that actually calculating the velocity, as Tom was demonstrating, is the most complicated part of a moving interface problem. So when you see that there's a chunk which is common to moving interface problems, and that is moving the interface with a given velocity, you see this chunk which is general, and it's definitely the easy part. Naturally, that's the part that you should try to solve, right? Basic gamesmanship. So that's what we're looking for. The basic approach is using semi-Lagrangian contouring formulas, which I'll explain later, and it gives you this sort of stuff. It does topology evolution with absolutely no sweat. It runs fast, which means that you can take reasonable time steps. There's no artificial time step constraint. And it uses a reasonable amount of effort to represent the interface. Order of n log n is where n is the number of degrees of freedom in the interface. And the log n is due to the fact that you have global information about pieces of the interface that are going to cross each other. You can't do that in order of n, but log n is not very big either. And then the most important thing that this gives us is a completely modular setup where we take the velocity, we move the interface, and then somebody else has to deal with the velocity. Somebody else is usually you, but you put on a different hat to do that. So we've implemented this to second order accuracy in 2D. Generalization of both the both of the twos in this scheme is totally straightforward because we haven't done anything that is specific to two dimensions or to second order accuracy. Higher order accuracy is the easiest thing once you get first order accuracy, but 3D should be fairly straightforward. In the process of doing that, it turns out that we had to do the computational geometry because the computer scientists had only proved that it existed and not actually provided practical algorithms, as is their wont. And we had to do the contouring more accurately because the kind of contouring that we do is different from what you usually want to do when you're making a topo map. So here's the framework we're looking at. A moving interface, which I like to call gamma of t, is a smooth closed curve. Actually, it's not smooth because it typically has corners or cusps or other types of nastiness which prevent it being smooth. So it's piecewise smooth, at least. It's a curve in 2D, it's a surface in 3D, and we have a parameterization, x of t, comma s. Actually, I'm still not telling the truth because it's typically a whole collection of smooth curves, but that's still one parameterization. And this is a function of t, time, and s, which is some parameter, which is one-dimensional for a curve, two-dimensional for a surface. And this curve is moving with a normal velocity. And in fluids, you're always thinking that you have the complete velocity of each point on the interface because those are materials points. But you can't always guarantee that you're going to have that. In many moving interface problems, you only get the normal component of the velocity. And this is a philosophical issue. The question is, can you actually identify a point on the interface? And the answer is, well, tangential motion just corresponds to relabeling the points on the interface. So a lot of times you can't assume that you know that. In solidification, for example, the normal velocity, you only get the normal and you only get it on the interface. Totally different from fluids where you get the whole velocity and you get it everywhere. So we want to assume as little as possible of the problem we're solving, and therefore we're only going to work with the normal velocity. If you give me the tangential velocity, that's fine too. Now the moving interface problem you're solving says a moving interface problem is, from the interface's point of view, a specification of the normal velocity in terms of everything else in the problem. And actually, it's a specification of the normal velocity as a functional of the interface. And this sounds very restrictive, but from the interface's point of view, the universe exists in order to tell it what to do. Right? Let's say the temperature field or the fluid velocity. Whatever it is, this is just some medium where the interface stores information to feed back into the velocity. So it's like an ODE, y prime equals f of y. Right? Y may involve three nuclear explosions and some water wave experiments, but it's just some function of y, the state. Your salary. Okay? So there's all this stuff going on, which is a way for the interface to talk to itself in a delayed manner. History usually comes in if you try to get rid of that stuff. And here's another example that I could keep in the back of my head, which is sort of the simplest complicated example of a moving interface problem. It says that you've got a temperature field off the interface. This is a model for grain growth, sintering, sometimes called volume diffusion. Popular in material science, just because it's the simplest complicated example. And it says you have a temperature field which is harmonic off the interface, satisfies some boundary conditions on the outside of the box. Of course, that's already difficult. Then it satisfies two boundary conditions on the moving interface. One says that the temperature is equal to the curvature, maybe with a minus sign, depending on how you define your curvature. And the second one says the velocity is the jump in the normal derivative of the temperature, which is also called, as Tom was mentioning, the Dirichlet to Neumann operator, acting in this case on the curvature. This Dirichlet to Neumann operator seems to pop up all over the place. So this is a non-local problem, right? There's lots of moving interface problems that just say, look where you are and move in the appropriate direction. This problem, you have to know everything in order to move anything. So it's non-local, it's non-linear, of course, and it's third order. It looks like y sub t equals y triple x, because the Dirichlet to Neumann operator involves one derivative, curvature is two more, so this looks like KdV, right? Sort of equation that you love to solve. True. It's stable. It has it's hard. You could go on. Yes. There's a absolute value of k in place of one of the k's, which makes it minus absolute value of k cubed instead of just I k cubed like KdV. But as far as order goes, you know, the brute force classification is how many derivatives do you got? Okay, so that's a simplest complicated example. Simpler examples already show you that doing something in general is not going to be totally trivial. So if you have passive transport, for example, here you have initially circular bubbles in a rotating shearing flow, and what this tells you is that the interface can be as much more complicated than the flow as you want it to be. So however simple the flow can be, the interface can become arbitrarily bad, and you'd better follow it efficiently. In particular, you'd better not do something that involves discretizing the entire domain with a uniform grid, because you won't be able to afford it. If you move up just a little bit and add some first-order geometry, like dependence on the direction of the normal, which is what's going on here, there's a six-fold anisotropy in the problem. You start with a bunch of initially circular seeds. They grow. They merge together. This is already something you can't have with passive transport, because in passive transport, the interface points satisfy an ODE, and mathematicians would like to prove existence and uniqueness theorems for that sort of thing. Here, all those theorems go out the window, and you can have merging, you can have corners, so the solution's not smooth in a whole variety of ways, and you have to be able to handle that. So you cannot assume the solution is going to be globally smooth. You can make it smooth by adding curvature dependence with the right sign, but then you commit the same sin as if you try to solve a convection problem by adding diffusion. Right? Then you have different time scales, and so stability becomes an issue. Stiffness becomes an issue. So whatever you do, it's going to be difficult. You could prove the Poincaré conjecture? Yes. Yeah, but when you have a wonderful numerical method, why waste it proving something? Why not compute something instead? It's like this story about, I forget who it was, these numerical analysts who had a numerical method for computing blood flow in the heart. And so they came to a conference and showed blood flow in a stationary heart. And someone asked, well, why don't you have the heart move? Because your method will work equally well in that situation. And they said, we couldn't prove convergence. Yeah, and they were solving the asymptotic limit as t goes to infinity after you're dead. Yeah. Okay, so here's the approach. Doesn't take infinity. Well, it depends on the rate of progress of medical science, right? I'm trying not to catch up. Okay, so the basic approach is to be implicit and to be linear in a certain sense. Both of those are not exactly what you think they are. The implicit part is intended to... I dropped the transparency, and I should have said something about... Now I have to find the switch. Okay. I should have said something about mathematical theory. If you have a local geometric problem, everything's great. If you have a non-local problem, everything's not great. So numerical computation is a really good idea. That's about as much mathematical theory as I feel like I need. So the idea is, first off, I want to handle topological difficulties by representing the interface implicitly. So it's the zero set of a function. This is an old idea. I think Truesdale says that Euler was the first person to use this idea. And he was usually right about stuff like that. There are various functions you can use. Anything that cuts through the interface in a robust way so you can get it back. I like the sine distance function, because that makes the computational geometry of finding the interface afterwards a whole lot simpler. Any implicit representation of the interface gives you the geometry. And this actually is a good thing to do even if you're not moving interfaces. Suppose I got some ugly thing and I want to know its curvature. A really good way to do it is to embed it in an implicit representation and then evaluate these simple differential formulas rather than parameterize the interface by arc length or whatever and calculate a lot of derivatives and combine them together. These are actually really handy formulas. The velocity has this formula, which I don't want to evaluate, of course, because somebody already gave me the velocity. I don't need to evaluate it. But I want to take this formula and dot it with grad phi. And that gives me this equation with a v here, which says that every point on the interface moves with velocity v, sort of what I knew already. But if I can extend the velocity to a global velocity field, w, which is usually completely fictitious, it's not the fluid velocity, then I can solve. Question? Yeah, so v is what someone gives me. V is what I persuade somebody to compute for me. Yes. And it's W because it's twice as complicated as V. Everything has a reason. More questions? If you ask lots of questions, then you don't have to listen to any technical details. Because then you're right. But it depends on whether you think in sounds or think in pictures. I'm a picture kind of guy. Yeah. For me, it's V and W. Yeah, V and double V. That way we can resolve the situation. Okay, but so I'm going to extend the velocity to a global velocity field, and I'm going to do it my way. I'm not going to pay any attention to what you tell me about the velocity off the interface, because the interface doesn't know anything about what happens off the interface. And my numerical method isn't going to look at that either. And then I can evolve the interface by evolving all the implicit function representation values with speed W. And this is completely trivial, because all advection is saying is that stuff moves with speed w. So the values of phi are what determine where the interface is, and those are moving with the right speed. And after I move it, a lot of topology may have changed, but I didn't notice it because phi is an implicit representation, and when topology changes, it happens inside phi. I don't ever see it. Pieces merge together. It's like phi might look like this, and then the zeros move up and down, and they can come together and move apart, and I don't have to worry about it. So there's no emotional involvement with the topology of the interface, no surgery required. When I'm all done, at the end of a time step with the implicit representation, I go back to an explicit representation because I typically want to see what the interface did, and the way I do that is by contouring phi, which means extracting its zero set. I don't extract all the contours like I would for a topo map. I just extract the zero set. And this idea of contouring actually turns out to be everything there is in this method. You can formulate the method entirely in terms of contouring an exact representation of what the interface is doing, except that you can't evaluate the exact representation. So the idea here is don't ever move the interface, because if you move the interface, pieces will move together, pieces will pull apart, you'll have to deal with it. That corresponds to the fact that points will move along characteristics. Characteristics will cross. Pretty soon you've got people talking in both ears and you don't know who to believe. So you don't move the interface forward. And instead, you do the following slightly weird thing. You say you want to move from a time t to t plus k. You go to time t plus k and you go around and you ask every point x, could you be an interface point? And the criterion for being an interface point is that there's a consistent velocity, which such that if you look back along the characteristic moving with that velocity, you hit the interface. You hit the point where phi equals zero. So you can evaluate sort of distorted phi values at the new time level, and what you're interested in is where those are zero. So you want to find the zero values of a formula for the exact solution, which says that the solution at the new time level is the solution at the old time level at the foot, modified by moving the point back along the characteristic to the foot of the characteristic at the previous time level. So some people call this the backward characteristic method. You notice this is just a contouring problem. I don't have any grid. I don't have any numerical method. All I have is the interface is the zero set of a function. And I want to extract it. And in order to extract it, I'm going to have to evaluate this function a bunch of times. I can look at this in a way which is more familiar to a lot of numerical people as semi-Lagrangian advection. Semi-Lagrangian methods are methods which are sort of halfway between Lagrangian and Eulerian. I don't know why they don't get called semi-Eulerian. But that would be alphabetical order. But anyway, so they look back, they take grid points and look back along characteristics. I don't take grid points, but I am looking back along characteristics. So you take the exact solution. Courant, Isaacson, Reese, CIR, did this for hyperbolic conservation laws where it doesn't work very well. Turns out to work much better for moving interfaces, and in particular, it does stuff that we want it to do. First order scheme is just to take the velocity you've got at the point you are and look back along a straight line. Second order, you can correct that to higher order accuracy. By repeated doing this sort of thing, you can get arbitrarily high order. And the reason for doing it is efficiency. This gives you a formula which you can simply evaluate wherever you want to evaluate. If you want to know if a new point's on the interface, you evaluate this formula. And then, is it zero? Or is it close to zero? And if it's close to zero, and furthermore, you've got a sign, so you can zero in on the interface without having to put down a uniform grid of 1,000 by 1,000 points and evaluate something at each point. So this is totally grid-free. Now, of course, you're going to want to put in a grid at some point, or maybe you won't. Maybe you'll just throw random points at the problem until you get the answer, the Monte Carlo approach. So in general, what you need to make this work now is geometric algorithms for contouring, finding the zero set of this formula you've got, distancing, which is the inverse operation to contouring, because after I move the interface forward, I've got a new interface. In order to go another step, I've got to find the signed distance to the interface, because that's what I'm using to do the implicit representation. So these two are inverse operations, and then there's this related thing I've got to do, which is to take the velocity and extend it off the interface in some convenient, fast, accurate, reasonable way. Well, it doesn't have to be accurate. It has to be exact on the interface, but I can do whatever I want off the interface, and what I want is usually dictated by numerical convenience. So these are three sort of big general problems which can all be done in the same way. They can be done a whole variety of ways, but they can all be done with quad trees, which are meshes that look like this. At this point, I'm using this mesh, but I'm not using this for discretization or finite element methods or anything like that. I'm just using this as an aid in computational geometry because this is a spatial organization of my problem which allows me to know when I look at a point on the curve or a point off the curve where things are. So this is just a hierarchical organization of the problem, not a discretization tool. How much time do I have?
About
3 minutes. 3 minutes, wow. You guys are asking too many questions. Okay, so the quad tree allows you to do all these things, find the nearest distance, because, you know, you put a point here, this cell knows where everything is, so you can find the nearest points on the interface, and it costs you order of n log n work. So it does signed distance computation, it does velocity extension, and you can do contouring with quad trees, and in fact, my original scheme for doing this, once I had built the quad tree, I decided to get my money's worth out of it, so I did contouring with it, and that gives you reasonable computational results. So here's sort of a rogues gallery of standard examples that you like your moving interface code to be able to solve. Of course, all of these can be solved like lightning by specialized methods. The advantage is here that I don't have a specialized method. I have a general method, which might take twice as long, but gets extremely good answers and doesn't require any effort. So here are things like passive rotation of a propeller. This is a couple of rotations. Actually, almost all of these calculations are mesh refinement calculations. Sometimes the mesh refinement doesn't show you two separate curves like it does here, because sometimes things are pretty accurate already and on a reasonably coarse mesh. Here you can see the mesh refinement sharpens up the inward tips of those propellers a little bit. Spinning propellers are kind of hard. Spinning squares are really hard, because corners get smeared out and trail and so forth. Here's the shearing calculation. So this is what happens when you move things with unit normal velocity. This is kind of an important test case for moving interface methods, because when corners move outward, they should smooth off. And when corners are pointing inward and moving outward, they should remain sharp like these do. And this happens all the time whenever you have a topology change. So it's very important to be able to get very sharp corners here. Here's a bunch of calculations that are mainly interesting in material science. And the interesting thing about them is that these show no grid effects. I start with something. I'm using a square grid as an organizational tool, but I get a perfect pentagon in the end. even no matter what angle things are located at relative to the grid. And this is a test you rarely see in papers on moving interface methods because almost all methods fail this test. Here's a curvature calculation. I find curvature calculations rather boring because everything shrinks to a round dot and disappears. Volume preserving curvature is a little more fun because things shrink to round dots while preserving volume. And if you have a bunch of bubbles growing and merging by volume preserving curvature, it means you take the curvature, that's the velocity, except that you subtract a constant, which makes the average over the interface zero. That average over the interface is just 2 pi times the number of bubbles, so when bubbles merge, it jumps. So this is a discontinuous, non-local, but geometric calculation, which ends up with round dots of constant volume, whatever it was equal to initially. So the method worked pretty well on these examples, and it also works well on Ostwald ripening, where it costs a lot more because you're evaluating a velocity which is non-trivial. And in fact, this method, the moving interface part of this code, is so fast that the time for the total computation is usually dominated by velocity evaluation for any non-trivial problem. And that's the best you can hope for. We're improving in a variety of ways. One is to do higher order contouring. I just had a student finish who wrote a contouring code. We're now in the agony of making his contouring code work with our moving interface code. And that the advantage of that is going to be a higher order accuracy at equal speed, because this is going to produce geometrically second order continuous things, which means we'll have a continuous curvature, and things with high order derivatives should work a whole lot better. We always have to compute stuff like this, where you have contours merging and breaking, and they always go through some topological near singularity, and in fact they go through a singularity like this. This slide shows you that when you go from linear interpolation to cubic interpolation, you save a lot of triangles. And triangles are an endangered species, should not be wasted. Like the electrons that computers work on. So let me conclude by saying that I looked at a very general problem. The problem that we looked at is already not the most general problem, and in many fluid problems there are additional ramifications, such as carrying along information on the interface, internal structure of the interface, elasticity on the interface, which we haven't even begun to build into this. But what we do have so far is an efficient modular approach that basically allows you to move the interface with any velocity you want at order of n log n per step, which is the best you can expect. When you solve any specific moving interface problem, you typically, for non-trivial problems, need a fast PDE solver and some geometry engine. We provide the geometry engine, but someone has to do a PDE solver. Of course, you can use a slow PDE solver, too, if you have lots of computer time. And one thing that does come up if you look at more examples, which I didn't have time for, is that how you do the contouring is incredibly important and usually ignored. So thank you.